15 to 20 million
jobs. I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We are national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, serving Philadelphia and the tri-state area, as well as the entire United States and the world by going to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Now, if you live out of the area, remember to send an email to your family members and friends and let them also join our family. As I go around and meet with people, I'm really pleased to see the various things that people tell me about what they gather from our good panel on the radio. Many people I have never witnessed before in my life. In fact, on Sunday, I want to compliment the good people there from Camden, as well as Deptford, New Jersey, for the great holiday celebration that they had. I was pleased to be there and meet so many of you. And I also gave out, as the gentlemen know that are around me from the panel, everywhere I go, I give out our radio advertisements and invite more and more people to come in. As we mentioned last week, our theme for 2016 is support our manufacturers. Support America's manufacturers. And why did we come up with that theme? Well, if we're not making competitive products in America for everything that is sold in America's stores, well, then all we are is customers for foreign-made products. And how do we expect Americans to make a living and expand their job skills and be competitive? This past week, I am pleased to state that on Monday, we inaugurated a new mayor in Philadelphia. I was pleased to meet with him. I worked with Jim Kenney, now Mayor Jim Kenney, for 28 years. So I have a good idea, and he has a good idea about what we do and how we do things even in the social service field, because he himself was in that field for a while before he entered city council. Also, Alan Dom, our very good friend, is now Councilman Alan Dom. And we had the opportunity to speak. We were all up there at the Academy of Music. We had a great time. It was a long day. It was a windy day. And boy, oh boy, but it was great. It was so much fun. And some of our other good friends and supporters, Lisa Dealey and Mark Skula and all, were sworn into office. It was just a very special event. So I want to compliment all of the people who are out and about spreading the word about American made. And of course, many of the people complain that there's simply not enough American made products available in the stores. And that's mainly because the dealers have not been able to get enough companies in the USA to supply them with the level of products that they would need to have for sale to keep that product on the shelf with the volume of customers that they have. Well, today I'm pleased to say that we have our three very distinguished panel members with us, and they include Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Connolly, East Coast Vice President of SCORE, and Rich Logis, who is the principal of RJL Technology Integration. Our engineer is up and ready to go, Henry Chaplinsky. And as always, I'm Michael Blihash, your host, and I want to say thank you to all of the people that stopped me in my travels to let me know how they enjoy the program. Many people listen on the internet as they're doing their emails and things like that, but they do listen, and it's a whole new world. The radio, you have to be sort of seated there or in the car or in the house or on the phone. You could listen in on the phone. But the internet has allowed us to really expand our listenership. And we're not just a small group of people that is concerned about jobs in America. We're a growing number of people, and we mean something. Our voices mean something. And that's what I'm going to ask, that we direct our program today. We mean something. What more can we do to make our theme this year support our manufacturers, support America's manufacturers? I'm going to start off today with Mark.
How you doing, Mike? Rich, Larkin, Henry, Happy New Year's. Very exciting times. We know this is going to be a big year. Mike, I love your theme, you know, 2016, support our American manufacturers. That's what we do best, I think, our panel, our listeners, supporting the manufacturers. And some people, I think we've got to explain better, Mike, this year, how they do that by, you know, my Made in America stores are going out and asking for Made in America products, and just their voice, just their effort causes the best thing that could ever happen to our economy, because the products you buy at your retail stores are actually put together by Americans in American factories. And I think, Mike, you touched on it last week where you even said a pizza, anything put together,
everything.
We love. A true manufacturer says, you know, turning sand into steel is manufacturing. And I argued that point years ago that, no, you know, building a trailer, like I build a trailer from raw tubing and steel and putting it together, all the components, welding it together, painting it, and selling it as a finished product creates many jobs, from who I buy my components from to assembling it and my people assembling it and then selling it out the front door. Even if I distribute it to another dealer, he then sells it. So it all works, Mike. I'm excited about this year. I think we've got to put a heavy focus and emphasis on buying Made in America and stick to that focus, because we are making a change.
You know, you're absolutely right. I have to say this, too. That is, it's very interesting as I talk with people and they get into telling me, do you know, Michael, 2 miles from here, there was this company, and they were there for years and years from the time I was a kid. Now they moved off into India to save money, to save cost of health care and things like that. Well, those are the kinds of things that we have to change. What we're witnessing, gentlemen, and all of our listeners, is the failure of leadership not to respond to changes in America that have not helped our people move up the ladder of success. Larkin, what do you have to add?
Good morning, Michael. Good morning, everybody, from rainy and cold Florida. I bid adieu to all involved, especially our listeners today. You know, Michael, you say, what do we do in order to regain manufacturing jobs in the country? And, you know, where do we start? I got a great place to start. And I heard this earlier this week, and I laughed so hard I thought I was going to die. You know, Donald Trump is a Republican frontrunner right now, and he's promised in many of his speeches to bring manufacturing jobs back to America and workers back to America from abroad. They can't, you know, and this is his quote, they can't get jobs because there are no jobs, because China has our jobs and Mexico has our jobs, and I'm going to bring the jobs back to America. Now, he hasn't detailed how he's going to do that, but I can give Mr. Trump a really good head start. Mr. Trump neglected to mention in any of these Bring Jobs Back to America speeches that he has his own line of neckties. I think everybody probably knew that.
Yes.
There is the Donald Trump line of neckties. Every line, every necktie that he has sold or plans to sell for the next 3 years is made in China.
Yes, I know that. I was given one as a gift. There is one thing that has changed with Donald Trump over the years. He has many products that are also made in America. They're made in New Jersey. They're made in New York. Many of the clothing lines I do have, and I was given several of those ties, which I then questioned. And by the way, Larkin, I do have one of those ties on today. It was a gift to me. So I am wearing it. That's a good that you brought that up. But there are many other items that were sold at the casinos when he was involved with them some years ago. So there was a balance. The thing that is different about Mr. Trump is he's opening up many doors, and he's not saying too much. But I know Mr. Trump. I've met him on a couple occasions. Not well by any means. But the thing is, he at least is scraping the bottom of the barrel to discuss jobs. The others are all hiding through, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. I want to hear some specifics now that we're in the year 2016 and just really what you want to consider. Months away from an election. November is going to come so fast in the blink of an eye when we look at time, in the blink of an eye. And I want to hear Mr. Trump also, and not only Mr. Trump, but I want to hear Hillary and Cruz and Rubio and all of the people tell us, what are they going to do? I would like to give them one suggestion, and that is make national corporate taxes 10% across the board. Everybody in America benefits. Bring our jobs back here. Let our people pay additional taxes to the government by their weekly paychecks. That's the only way it's going to happen. Right now, we are collecting all those corporate taxes so that we can continue to pay people welfare, unemployment, and all of the other programs that are in service right now as a result of people not having a job, not being able to support themselves. So Mr. Trump, he is going to go to all these caucuses and this and that, but we are going to ask some questions now that 2016 is here, not only of Mr. Trump, but everybody. And in fact, if I can make sure I bring that in, I have five very important questions that we should start asking the candidates, start emailing the candidates, start posting it on all of our internet sites. These are the questions that we want. That's all wonderful about what happened in Benghazi and all. We have to live for today. We got up this morning and we're ready to go. Yes, Larkin.
I think that's all good and wonderful. But, you know.
I did see, I'm wearing one of those ties today. It was given to me as a gift.
I know, and you know that if I was sitting at that table with you, that I would get my scissors out and cut it off. You know I would. You know I would. And then give you the $18 that he charged you for the tie. But, yeah, we're getting a lot of lip service. Nobody's talking about how they're
nobody. But you know what? No one is talking because the American people are not questioning them. They are really filtering the questions that get to these candidates. Maybe we should have our own discussion. Maybe we should have our own panel discussions. What questions we want asked of the president. Let the people start riling up. Let them start Facebooking and emailing and texting. These are the questions that we want. Mike. Oh, they said they got 50,000 texts within a short period of time. How many of those texts asked about how Americans are going to support themselves and have a good feeling till the time they retire?
And Mike, every one of our leaders, our current leaders, need to look in the mirror right now, not through the window.
It is through their failure, their total failure. They've been a flop, F-L-O-P. They've been a flop. If they were not a flop, we would have jobs on every corner, just as the people told me in Deptford, New Jersey, over this past weekend. I could walk out of one door and look two blocks down the street and know that I could apply for a job at that company. That company now is in India, China, Vietnam. Why did that happen?
Because America get greedy, selfish, and lazy. We've got to fix that.
Right. Rich, you've been listening quietly. What do you have to add to that?
Oh, boy, I got my third espresso here already of the day.
You didn't give some, coffee I had up for the new year, Rick.
Today. Mark, I had some eggs and toast today on the toaster. Man, I've been ready for the first broadcast of the new year. I've been waiting all week for this, guys. Michael, and good morning to everybody, and happy new year to everyone and our listeners. I mean, Michael, the politicians haven't failed those who essentially funded their campaigns through PACs and lobbyists to create laws that would allow for offshoring of now what is $2+ trillion. And the politicians have done very well for them, right? Very, very well. So are we ever going to see that money? I've said on the show before, and I'm going to continue to say it, I doubt we'll see even a smidgen of that money come back here, because there's a number of things that will be adverse to our economy if a huge tax is levied against those monies. In other words, the tax exists, but we're just waiting to collect it. It's been deferred. So if $2 trillion, Michael, two-plus trillion, those companies that are offshoring and have to pay their 30-35%, you'll see huge sell-offs in the market. You'll see the dollar start to go on a downward spiral. And who's that going to affect the most? The people who are going to be most affected by that are the ones who are typically, we call them, right, middle class, working people, seniors, retirees. So we have this humongous monster, and what's done is done.
Richard.
And now it's a question of, we've got the jobs there, we've got the monies there. How do we start getting this country back to work? This is the number one issue.
Rich,
national security is a humongous issue. Of course it is. And you hate to rank issues, but I'm going to follow, you know, Larkin's lead on this from last week. When you start taking care of the economy and you start getting people back to work, things can start to fall into place on other things we need to address.
Rich, there are, as we speak, on this January the 6th, there are 29 million businesses registered in America. Half of them are small businesses. And another portion of them are mom and pop businesses, maybe even sole proprietors. One person, a lawyer, accountant, whatever. Can you imagine if just half of the other half of the 29 million that has multiple employees could just hire two new people to address the demand of consumers coming into the store? More important than that, have you ever heard any one of our leaders here in the United States, the whole Washington, all the people in the state government, have you ever heard any of them say, what are we going to do to approach at least the 25% of America's businesses that have large numbers of people to get them to employ another three, four, or five people? Mark, you have a number of people. Has anyone ever knocked at your door and said, Mark, how can I help you employ another five people?
It's funny you mentioned that, because yesterday, and Larkin, you'd know, I met with the UCIDA of Buffalo, and I actually, it was my kickoff of the year and my plan, because I've got General Welding, Made in America. We're ready to roll. My team's awesome, but, you know, we need capital. And, you know, I met with the UCIDA, and they're, you know, it's always about how many jobs can you create. So in your county, and Larkin, I think you know that well, and, you know, the UCIDA works with SBA and things like that. But, yeah, people don't realize I'm about livelihoods, creating jobs. And you're right, Mike. If everybody tried to create jobs instead of just make money here and get that whole relationship and how it works, we would be a better place. We have to, as a country, identify our disconnects, and I think Rich and Larkin and Mike, that's what we're talking about today, the disconnects. But let's not talk about them no more. Let's get fixing them. And that's, Mike, what you're talking about. Let's get hiring people. But you got to have jobs. You got to have the demand that Larkin talks about, supply, demand, and you have to build and have the supply chain come back. But you've got to start here now. It's going to take some time, but we got to believe in it and get going.
Now, Larkin, that's a very good question that came to my mind. If you sat down with your people and said, have they heard from any of their local elected officials or national officials saying, SCORE, can you help us help the businesses so that we could hire more people? Just half of the 29 million registered businesses in America. Let's look at them to see if they could just get one employee. That already would be a big amount of people. That would be 16 million new jobs if we just went to half of the bigger companies that we have, who have some big companies too. Has anyone in SCORE complained to you and said, wow, everybody is coming to us from our elected officials saying, let's get more people into working positions?
Well, you know, I'll make two comments. One is that this problem is a heck of a lot more complex than we have a tendency to make it sometimes. And secondly, I'm going to say in the 11, 12 states that I am very active in, the answer to that question is yes. There are city council people all over the Northeast. There are legislators, but certainly not federal legislators. I don't deal with them very often, but state legislators that want to create these initiatives that will, in fact, create jobs. But if you were to come to me and say, okay, Larkin, here's $5 million. Let's change that. Here you are, Larkin. Here's $5 billion. Let's start manufacturing firms in Philadelphia. Well, it's kind of not that easy. We have to source and find out what it is we're going to build, and then we discover that we're only a segment of the supply chain. As you said, Michael, it starts with taking sand and create, or I think it was, I don't know who said, take sand and create steel is really manufacturing. Well, that is the really fundamental manufacturing, but making component parts, making the electronics that have, you know, where do you start? How would I take $5 billion? How would the five of us take $5 billion and create manufacturing? You can ask all you want, but until you have the hardcore bricks and mortar manufacturing that is supplied by people who can live with the wage that you can afford to pay as a manufacturer, that's when it's all going to happen.
Yes, well, Mark, you were going to say.
What I would do with $5 billion would help. With $5 billion, we'd put a Made in America store next to every Walmart and military facility in the country. And we'd continue to grow my 7,000 product lines and 500 privately owned American businesses instantly, and they would have to, in turn, buy equipment and people right away. So, you know, I've got that working model that works. So it's complex, but it's simple. We can start really quick with Made in America products.
You know, Larkin, another thing that always amazes me, I was at the Mayor Kenny Bash the other night, the inaugural get-together, and I spoke briefly with Dr. Height, who's the superintendent of schools, and I said to him, more people are discussing getting the trades and industrial arts back into the schools. And, of course, the problem everyone focuses upon is, well, they've been out of existence for 25 years. Getting these people back into the classrooms is not going to be that easy. And that's a fact, but you have to start. And I'm pleased to say that the School District of Philadelphia has started a program where they are looking into expanding the industrial arts programs and the trades, and they already have 400-plus students. That's a big, big plus. These are new students. We had some trade schools, and they're beginning to expand. I'm going to try to talk with them. Maybe I'll get them on the show sometime in the next few months to talk about what they're doing to share their ideas. The problem is this, Larkin. We talked about bringing all 50 governors into one location to talk about what they need to help their businesses expand here in the USA. What we also need, and that this is going to be something that could be done quite easily, is get the manufacturers that are there right now in the system. Get them together. Get them together by zip code, by county, by state, and tell the people, this is what we need to expand. These are the products that we could expand in the USA within the next year or two. We need more skilled laborers. We need more people that are going to run the offices, do the purchasing, do the billing, do the shipping. No one is getting this type of people together. It's all window dressing. When these politicians argue with me, they run for their hills because I could talk 1 hour on this subject and they don't want to give you 15 minutes. The fact is, no one nationally is saying we have to have a national manufacturers forum. We have to do something to get the people off and running the race, not just sit there in the seats watching. There is a gentleman that I know told me a long time ago. He said to me, if you're not at the banquet table eating, you're either watching the other people eat or you're one of the servants serving to the food to the people eating at the banquet table. Simple as that. We have to get back to the table where we sit, eat, share suggestions, and move into a successful mode. Yes, Rich, I know you're ready.
Michael, how many coffees, Rich? You asked at the outset about what it is that we can do. And again, to echo on this point of Larkin's a few minutes ago, we can all have a tendency, right, to simplify things, and of course these issues are more complex than typically we may talk about on air. Yes, I agree with this point. But I really think, Michael, that part of American Made is very much consistent with when we talk about voting. And if you think about why a lot of people don't vote, I still believe that the number one reason why is because they don't think that their vote can have any influence. And I do think that some of that way of thinking does spill into consumerism and how we think about what we buy, where we buy from. I mean, I'm not going to say on to you guys here and for our listeners that I have 100% American made, that I buy 100% American made. But I will tell you this: I buy more American made items now for a couple of reasons. One, awareness, and number two, the good news is that I do see more and more things that are being made here. And small business, and Michael, small business itself is something that there are a number of small businesses here in Florida where I am, which I support. Now, am I 100% purchasing from small business? No. So my point on all of this is that our economy is very intricate. When it's working at its best, when the engine is working best, it's dynamic, there's mobility. Those are the things that we're lacking right now. It's not that they're non-existent. They do exist, but the kind of mobility, the thriving small business, and how many millions, Larkin, of small businesses do we have? That right there is the engine. See, if there's something wrong with the vehicle and we're not moving at the speed we need to hone in on this first big group, and that big group is small business. That's the engine of selling. The people in small business who are employed at small business, that's the majority of our consumers. So if people start, instead of thinking about corporate inversions in Ireland and Panama and China, right? Of course, we have to talk about this. But, Michael, we start with just individual purchases, individual shopping at a small business we like. You know the kind of residual effect that can have? It's the same thing like when I talk about getting people to vote. And I talk to people and I ask them, are you registered to vote? And I've, and three dozen or so people I've talked to have verbally committed to me to go register to vote. And I'm going to work the polls here because I'm convinced, I can't prove it, but I'm convinced that where I am is a potential hotspot for voter fraud. So I'm going to work the polls here.
Oh, Rich, you're going to do a good job there. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I'm going to work the polls here. So we can see, that's the thing, Michael. The hard part in this is trying to convince people, right? It's trying to convince people that their votes, their consumerism can make a difference. Why did 34% turnout only show up last year? Because you have all of those people who stayed home. The vast majority of those people who stayed home are, and this is a bit of an irony on this and a contradiction, but I bet you a lot of those people who stayed home, they care about these issues. They care about the direction America's going, and they care about all these various things that we talk about. But they don't come out because they look at typically the candidates that get put up, and you have two primary candidates, and they look at the candidates and say, is there really much of a difference? Unfortunately, Michael, they are right. You know, that's what I've been saying for a really long time. They look at the candidates and say, well, is there really much of a difference? Is it worth it? Does my vote matter?
But Rich, you're right. And here is what I'm going to ask all of our listeners and all of our panel members to do this year. Let's sit and discuss ways to motivate the people to get out and vote. What I'm seeing in this primary election coming up is that more people are discussing what's happening amongst the candidates than I've ever heard in years. I've never heard anything like it. And it's probably because Trump is, making all his points known. Hillary's making all her points known. Sanders is really speaking up. We have other people. We've never had so many people speaking up about all these issues. One issue they have not touched, unfortunately, is What are we going to do to bring back the jobs in America? I want specifics. I want to know what is the plan today. You're going on a road trip. You either look to see where you're going or you're going to go on in circles forever. We can't spend any more time. And I'll take just a minute to tell you this. In the year 2000, America's population was 281 million people. And we had 134 million people of working age and able-bodied in full and part-time jobs. In 2015, we have 322 million people, and only 149 million people have full and part-time jobs. The point is, in 15 years, America's population grew by 41 million people, but job opportunities grew by less than 20 million. So in the past, we were already way down on the list of not enough jobs back in 2000. So as 15 years passed, 41 new Americans came into the picture, and we had less jobs. We didn't have enough jobs back in 2000. So here we are in 2015. We need a total of 40 million jobs. And yet nobody's talking about that. I'd like to hear Rubio and Cruz and Trump and Sanders and also Hillary and everyone else that's running really make a hit on this. Let's get them to follow our theme. Support our manufacturers. Support America's manufacturers. What are you going to do to bring jobs back to America? What are you going to do to help small businesses get more people employed so that they can, you know, have better business and people coming into their stores, not on welfare checks, but on checks that they earned through a regular job?
And some of the rhetoric that we've applied to this issue doesn't address a lot of the manufacturing jobs in the United States that were lost over the last 50 years that didn't go overseas. They simply disappeared with the advent of new technology.
Right.
Well, I'd love to know how many people are not working for the UAW right now because of robotics on all of the manufacturing lines.
You're right. So, and Larkin, they did a nice survey, which we had spoken with Botany 500 people and all. We could get another 14 million jobs. That's people working on the line, making all sorts of clothing, selling, packaging, you know, modeling, the whole deal. 14 million people within a few years in clothing. It's not controversial. Clothing industry in America was the biggest ever up until 1975. Why did it turn all the way around, Larkin?
Well, I think it was a lot of reasons, a variety of reasons. Probably the main one being that you could build a Botany 500 suit a lot cheaper in Indonesia or the Philippines than you could in the last clothing plant I ever saw. I used to walk in and stand at the door next to the big fan and just in awe look at 80 men and women running sewing machines, literally sewing the lining into I think they were Botany 500. I don't know who this guy made suits for, but he made tons of them. Then I'd go up front and buy the suit at half price in their, they call it their second shop, but they were fine suits. And this was in Huntington, West Virginia.
And they were all over. They were at Broad and Lehigh in Philadelphia and every imaginable place. Why did that happen that no one said, well, wait a minute, how can we have all of our suits only made in Italy and China and Vietnam and all these other Hong Kong custom tailors? All these were on the street for years and years. Why did it happen that we never stopped it from leaving this country?
I think, Mike, I just thought of the perfect guest I got to get on this month for us, and that's Bob Chesbro, the owner of Wigwam Socks in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, third generation. So, Larkin, you reminded me when you went up, you know, when I flew up to Sheboygan Wigwam Socks, which is the top sock sold, not because we sell it, it's the number one sock made. This plant I walked in, there was 300 sewing machines. They looked, again, like your grandmother on speed. You know, really, a sock has 200 different stitches. It's incredible what a sock goes through. It's double the size. When they finish it, they shrink it. I was impressed. I'm a steel guy, and now I take my socks and I carefully lay them in the laundry, you know. But Bob Chesbro can explain. He's been to Washington. He's been on the front of all the TradeX. Bob's a great guy, and he's doing it today. They have 5,000 outlets for Wigwam socks, so it can be done. He used to laugh when he first met me. He said, "Where'd you come from?" I said, "Don't you do the shows in our country?" He said, "I'm an outlaw in our country." He said, "They gave all our jobs away on government deals with other countries, but that was the stuff that fed my families for years." But Bob is doing it. They're a quality house. They're right next to Kohler in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. But I will get Bob on, and he can answer a lot of these questions. Great guy. It really gets it.
Mark, you're right. And what we're trying to do,
we're
trying to do through this broadcast and through all the things that we are promoting on the internet and texting and all the sending out our broadcast, we're trying to influence people to look for what is still made in America, products that they need, with the hope that more people will get the idea that it does pay to do business in America. That's number one. Number two, we're trying to wake up our politicians to let them know that they can't just dwell on taxes. We have to have an economy that works, where people work. They get a paycheck. They then spend in the economy. We can't have people just sitting waiting for Uncle Sam to help them out. This is not it in the way it is. But working in social services, I can tell you that Uncle Sam has made it very difficult for people to make a living because they scared the companies out of the country. Now the people have no job and they have to go to Uncle Sam to just stay basically afloat. Yes, Rich.
Well, that pretty much captures it in a couple sentences. I mean, I just continually say the government is a culprit. Big box stores are a culprit. Corporate America that wanted bigger margins and better bottom lines is a culprit. The executive committees of corporations that only care about today and not tomorrow. I mean, I could make a list as long as the wall in my living room. And all of it played a part.
And the majority of the biggest problem in Washington, D.C. is when we heard from Jennifer and the others, is that the people get their paycheck every week. So whether they do something in Washington or not, that paycheck comes on Friday, and they're not concerned. Why should they hear from, you know, so many complaints or, oh, we have to get this one and that one, have more hearings?
I've said that all along, Michael. You you call Congress in and tell them, listen, we're going to have to cut your pay if you can't get the budget in line. Let's do a little bit of corporate America. There is a good side to something.
2016, Larkin, I'm going to expect you to be very tough. I want you to eat your Wheaties every morning and really put the claw down. By the way, I want you to know one more thing, and I'm pleading with everybody this week to go to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Right on the top of the right side is the U.S. debt clock. I'm asking you to check that clock out because through good friends and contacts, there are now some new links on there which are extremely interesting and will open the eyes of people. It says right now where we are with employment today. It says where we were on January the 1st, 2000. It says how many people are working in full-time jobs, part-time jobs. I'm pleading with you. And by the way, the new files have right on the top, in the U.S. workforce now. And then it says, in the U.S. workforce in 2000, the year 2000. There's a lot of new links on there. My compliments to the people who have to do this to satisfy the requests of people asking them to fix the debt clock. I may be one of them, but the thing is, the major part of it is when people look at the debt clock, your clicks on the debt clock mean something and they see that people are interested. So please do go to the debt clock and look at all the links They're active links. They show to the second what's happening. Also, when you click on the link, and this is information provided by the United States Census Bureau and the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So all of the information is not Mickey Mouse. It's the facts and the figures. As we speak right now, America is in debt $18.864 trillion. How could that possibly be? And no one in Washington is bringing attention to that. Maybe one or two people throw it here and there. They don't care, Larkin. You're right. You said it from day one. They don't care because the paycheck is there on Friday. They don't have any worry about, I need to fill my gas tank. I have to get my suit pressed or whatever because I sat in the hearing for 2 hours and it's all wrinkled up. Somebody is there. A valet is there to do it. They don't care. And there's a few that I better keep my mouth shut. As I said earlier in today's show, if we don't make competitive products in this country for every item that's sold in America, when I go around and look in my house, I have a lot of stuff that's made in America that's 20 years old. Some of it's sitting on shelves, but it's stuff that I use maybe once a year at Christmas time or whatever. Now I go shopping and I look, it's all foreign made. How did it turn around and nobody saw it happening and nobody spoke up that it was happening?
Because my wife was totally enthralled when she went to a particular store that is famous for discounting, not a big boxer, that everybody would know, and walked in, and there was a string of 100, the small white bulbs, for $4.99. And when she brought it home and showed it to me, I said to her, Joe, my wife, Joe, how can anybody manufacture 100 light bulbs like that, put them in a string, in a circuitry, put a plug on it on one side and a recepting plug on the other side, put it in a box, wrap it, put it in a container, send it over from China, and make any money out of it? How's that happen? For $4.99? Good Lord, you've got $2 in just hard supplies going in. I mean, how did that happen? Who's subsidizing that?
That's right.
And yet I've got a string of lights with reflectors on them that hung on my wife's Christmas tree at her home, her parents' home, and we still put it on our tree. She has this deep-seated love and memories of these big colored bulbs, you know, red and green and blue, big, large Christmas bulbs with reflectors on them, and those things still burn.
Yep.
Now, granted, it's only for 2 weeks a year, but I throw away half of those little white bulbs that I bought last year and go out and spend $4.99 to buy another shload of cheap bulbs, and it just absolutely makes no sense.
Larkin, we
but
could spend
the American shows, consumer shows. Steps up to the cash register and here's $4.99. That's what I want.
We could spend shows on Christmas lights. I've got so many stories. I'm with you. You know, sometimes I think, boy, maybe that's the only thing we'll let them keep, you know, them little Christmas lights. But there is a commercial brand, and I found it through my town near me, with the bigger bulbs, like you grew up with kind of, and they were actually made up in Michigan. It was neat that I found it, but they're the bigger bulbs. But them little bulbs, like you said, how could they ever? And that just the time it took to wind them and put them in the box, I mean.
That's exactly right.
So I said to very funnily to one of the guys at a large big box home care store when I went in to see if I could find the bigger lights. He said, no, those lights are gone. And I said, what do you mean they're gone? You mean you, as the manufacturer, are forcing me to buy these little white things? I don't want those. I want the big colored lights that with reflectors and blah, blah, blah. And he said, no. They're gone. And I said, where'd they go? And he said, I don't know, but somebody told me if you look on page 1,792 of Obamacare, you'll see it inserted in the bill there.
You know, gentlemen, this is the kind of lively discussion I like. This is very interesting. This is what people need to hear. This is what our our politicians and the people running for the highest office in this country should be talking about directly to the people. I'd like to see not just these prim and proper debates coming up, but I'd like to see some community people invite Trump, invite Sanders, invite Hillary in a non-structured setting to really ask questions and get some real issues addressed. They don't want to address those issues because then they have too much follow-up to do. Larkin, and I'm going to ask everyone to do this as well. On the front page of American Workers Radio, we have another link that's up there. It's called the Million American Job Project. It's a YouTube. It's a few minutes. I plead with everybody to look at that YouTube. It's done by Alex and very well done. A good gentleman who's done several of these types of efforts. Check that out. It's been viewed by almost 4 million people. Please check it out. It's a short piece, maybe 5 minutes, but it'll give you a great education. And I ask that you send it around to family members and friends because we've got to get more and more people into the system. Like we said a few minutes ago, those suits that you remember having made in America, Larkin, I'd like to see a good portion of them restored here in the USA. We have a lot of people who have talent. We have a lot of people who would probably want to see themselves learn that skill because it's a good job. And today the wages are good. And by the way, if that suit would cost another $30 or $40, I really think that our people have to start considering how important jobs for Americans are and spend that extra dollar or two or 30 or 40 on an American-made item so that those people are kept employed.
And, you know, just as an aside, it would be a piece of cake to bring back and a slow motion start suits, clothing, pants, work pants. And here's my idea. It just dawned on me as I was sitting here listening to Mark a little bit earlier. We'll just send one suit and one pair of pants, work pants in different colors. And we'll send them and hang them on a rack in every one of Mark's stores. And you walk up and you like that pair of pants? Then here you go. Put your measurements down here. I need to know your inseam. I need to know your waist size, high rise, low rise, blah, blah, blah. Fill out the form. Hand it to Mark. He sells you a pair of pants. They're delivered in the mail 2 weeks later, exactly made for you. Why wouldn't that work?
I want to tell you, Mark and Larkin, on Sunday when I was at the Opłatkowa Kolacja in Deptford, New Jersey, a man came up to me and he said, he looked at my suit and he came to me and he says, I'm a suit maker here from New Jersey. I live here. And I said, very good. He says, I make 100% of everything from scratch. You come in, I measure you up, and you have your suit done in a few weeks. I keep your measurements. If you need another suit, we already have that part of the process, done. Well, that's what really I thought to myself, my God, and this guy was 50 years old, very intelligent man. And I thought to myself, that's exactly what we need in America. Yeah. But this guy's doing it as an exclusive shop, a tailor shop, made to order shop.
It's funny, guys, you're talking, I want to increase my product line this year with the new store coming. We get 10,000 square foot of one-level shopping. We want to get some bigger items if it's furniture and different things. But clothing, Larkin, like you talked about, khakis, very hard to find. There's a whiteshirt.com you can go to get a shirt. But we want to grow this area. When I was looking for my suit, and I always joke that's why I wore the T-shirt and jeans, I didn't have the suit. Well, I went to Men's Warehouse. They didn't have one. But Joseph Abad was very close because they bring the fabrics in, but they do manufacture them in our country now. There's like 2,200 employees, I believe, somewhere around New Jersey, Mike and Joseph Abad. But that's an area, and Larkin, you touched on. I mean, why can't you, why could we hang one and then get ordered? Because we want to get the tie. It's funny when you brought up Donald Trump's tie. I ran into that, remember, with the president of Caterpillar in San Antonio, Texas, about 2 years ago. Right before going on the panel discussion board, I picked on the president of Caterpillar. Caterpillar, and where's your tie from? And he opened the discussion and said, Mark, you really got me messed up here. I'm wondering where my tie's from. Well, last year I found two 100% Made in America ties. We sent them to the president of Caterpillar and this other, he was a football star, as kind of a joke, but here, I found you one so you don't have to ever be in that position again. But we do want to grow that line. It is possible. That's an area very tough. We can, our customers want more business wear. And it's a shame we don't make too much. But Joseph Abad is very close.
Okay, now, Mark, it's a very good point that you brought up. Let me ask you this scenario. And, Rich, you give me some idea on this because you started up a small business. Why couldn't we have a Joseph Abad company open in another state to handle purchases within the southern areas of the state? How about a Joseph Abad a division on the West Coast and one, you know, in the midsection of the country? Let's do something to encourage these people, because as I say 1,001 times to people, no president, no governor, no mayor, no city council members can rule what you buy with your own money. They can tax you, but they cannot rule what you do with your dollar. So go into the stores and spend your dollar wisely. You know, you just mentioned about clothing. How about, we spoke about this once before, how about all the football teams and all the baseball teams and the hockey teams? How about they make something come about where they say, this year we're going to direct all of our dollars, all of our franchise dollars, to make sure that companies in America benefit. When the people stand up in the stadium, we have 50,000 people stand, and they are going to pledge allegiance to having not only the flag made in America, but also having the clothing and the fan wear that they wear. Why can't this be done? Yes.
Well, because you're competing. And this is where you have to change the mindsets of America. You're asking a guy to buy a pair of khakis, work pants. Let's just flat out call them what they are, work pants. And to me, work pants need to be lined. Work pants need to have double stitching instead of the single stitching that they have now on all of the seams. They need to have good, strong pockets that are reinforced. That's a good pair of work pants. And to get that pair of work pants, you're probably going to have to pay 60 or 70 bucks. But guess what? You'll wear the damn pair of pants for a year at least.
Right.
And they won't rip anywhere, and you won't have the problems that the pair of pants that you can buy at the big box store for $18.99, you get them home, and the first time you go out to work, you carry your box lunch, you walk onto the construction site, and you all of a sudden you feel cold air on your butt. Well, guess what? The back seam just burn out on your pants.
You know, Larkin, you're talking about a culture change.
It's the decision they make at the point of purchase that kills us.
Yeah, it's a culture change. We became a throwaway world instead of a leading with quality, and it always brings us back to that. You buy a quality item, but the parents, the teachers, the schools, you got to teach quality matters. And you buy one garden hose for $10, you throw it away every year, or buy a good Goodyear one. It lasts you 5-10 years.
You go over to Italy. I had so much fun. I was over there for a little over two weeks with good friends, and I went from small village through Tuscany and the larger place, Florence, and you walk around and you look in awe at what they're not wearing cheap clothing. They don't wear it. They don't let it in the country. You can't import. Now, you can import Italian suits into America, but go over there and try to import an American suit over there. They won't have it. That piece of garbage. Why would I put that on my body? But they seem to survive very well, and everybody plays into everybody else's hand. I support you. You support me. But that doesn't happen in this country. We have become so motivated by everybody ought to be able to buy anything that they want.
Yeah, and you know, Larkin, you're right. Some people, they tell me that they're renting these trailers or whatever to store all their winter clothes, their summer clothes, and they bought so much stuff they haven't looked at it. They go in there, and once in a while, they give it away to Goodway or whatever. I think to myself, maybe it is time for us to start buying better quality, but less of it. because your closets in your house were made for certain items, not for you to have to go out and rent these rent-a-facilities to go store different clothing, your spring clothing and summer clothing. During 2016. Let's work on really supporting the theme. Support America's manufacturers. Support our manufacturers. As manufacturers see that, I'm sure that more and more of them are being encouraged by the fact that people are going out of their way to look for labels with American made. They are going out of their way to ask for stuff. A lady stopped me on Sunday too. She mentioned to me, I do look for American made stuff, Michael. It's tough in many places to find, I said, but the fact that you are speaking up where you shop is in itself an enormous accomplishment, because that store clerk never thought they were going to hear from customers the way they are hearing now.
Well, as Mark said, it's a cultural change. There's no question of that fact. And if we can turn the corner, we'll appreciate some successes. But it's got to be done, because, you know, if you open factories and you give people jobs, then they can go out and spend money.
Right.
And it's not the assumed money that they're going to get the fifth day of every month from the government. They, you know, you create a vibrant economy. And in a vibrant economy, everybody supports everybody else. Everybody's happy. Everybody works. Everybody donates. Everybody participates.
Right.
Today, if we ever went to war, I mean, all-out war somewhere, somehow, and I'm not predicting it or suggesting or even want it, but when that happened, and I heard this from Simon Sinek, it was one of the greatest speeches. When in the Second World War, there were guys that actually shot themselves because they were not allowed to fight in the Second World War. They weren't selected for some odd reason. You know, they pigeon-toed or too fat like me or whatever the reason was. People were annoyed that they couldn't be a part of the cause.
Well, that's what we have to get our people to be part of the cause, to bring our jobs back, support our small businesses, our medium businesses, our large businesses, so that they know it's beneficial to do business in America. I hate to tell you, but the hour has gone. I will acknowledge all of our sponsors, the balance of the week. And I want to thank all of them, wish them best wishes for a new year, thank them for their support. Closing words, Rich, you've been pretty quiet there today.
Well, you know, sometimes I got to shut up, Michael, also. People tell me I got some of the best rants in the business, but to be a good ranter, you got to sometimes shut up a little bit and listen.
Well, you were a great listener today. And Mark, what are your final thoughts of the day?
Yeah, I just think, you know, Happy New Year again, 2016. We know it's a historic year, presidential election. And just to remind our listeners, everybody, just believe. I mean, believe, go out, buy American like you have been, and let's keep this rolling.
And Dr. Larkin?
It's going to be a cultural change. Everybody has to take a deep breath. But we somehow have to get our culture back. We have to somehow get our love for our country back. And we have to somehow get our pride back that we are the best damn country on the universe.
And we are. And never let it be said otherwise. Ladies and gentlemen, I ask that you go to the front page of American Workers Radio and click on all of the links. Take a look at what we have to offer, what we are trying to do. We'll be back again here next Wednesday at 11. Until then, my very best, until this Saturday at 11 or at 3 in the afternoon, I wish you and yours the very best. And we will send out an email with today's broadcast. Kindly send it to your family members and friends. Looking forward to seeing you in my travels, and of course, looking forward to making sure that you're out there spreading the word about American Made. Have a great one.
Have a good week, guys.
Thanks, everyone.